Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
It is a beautiful day in St. Louis, Missouri, with a Cardinal playoff game just 1 hour away and President Obama coming in to screw up rush hour traffic. It is time to take an hour away from all of that and talk some poker. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is up over $73,000. And we have some news about something coming soon to Harrah's, another big tourney to be kind of a bookend with the World Series of Poker circuit event that'll be back here for its third year in April. There's going to be something else coming in December. I can't tell you about it right now. I was just talking with poker room manager Denise Tekowski moments before we went on the air, and she said, we can't release the details, but you can tease it. So that's the tease. In December, there will be a new tournament series debuting here at Harrah's St. Louis, and we'll have full details on that on next week's show. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is nowhere near St. Louis right now. He is in the heart of the UK at the EPT, the European Poker Tour, which is taking place in London. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm doing fine. That's the fourth year I've been over here to London, to the EPT, the Poker Stars' second biggest event, and it's pretty awesome. Getting to know the British, as you would say.
I hear that turnout was down just a little bit. I think everybody probably expected that in this post-Black Friday environment, but they still had nearly 700 people in the main event.
Yeah, absolutely. It was down a little bit. Most of the tournaments have been down a little. Without the influx of the U.S. players and with the sponsorship from hotels not existing, it's caused a bit of a problem, but not near as much as most people would think. In fact, I think the event they had at Brussels, they were actually up a little bit. So 700 they were very pleased with. They were hoping for 500 plus, and they got 7. That's not bad.
Now, I know that your year of run bad continued in the EPT main event. Do we need to go into any details about this? Any crushing bad beat stories that you feel you have to tell?
I don't have to. Most of them were not really crushing bad ones from bad play. But when a short stack shoves with a quarter of your chips, you call him because you already have a raise in there with a suited ace-queen. He turns over an ace-queen. You don't expect to lose. He four-flushed me with diamonds. And then three different times in the first four levels, I got pocket kings, and I lost all three times. You know, it's just, how did pocket kings lose to a queen-jack, a jack-ten, and pocket sixes?
The sick one of those, which I know about because you told me, was the guy who called off all of his chips with Jack-10 offsuit when you had gotten them all in with pocket kings. And he makes it straight.
Yeah.
That's just sick.
Yeah. All in pre-flop, you know. And I turn over kings, and the guy wilts and goes, oh, my gosh, you know. And then it flops the queen 9-8, you know, on the flop.
Wow.
Not much you can do about that.
All right, so where are you headed off to next?
Well, we're going down to the WSOP Europe. Going to be in London for a couple more days. There's still some tournaments going on here. And then we head down to fly into Nice, and they're picking us up at the airport and taking us over to Cannes. I've never been over to the place where the film festival takes place. But we're going to be right on the Mediterranean, be down there for several days. The WSOP Europe is going on. It starts on Friday, I believe.
How many of those events are you planning on playing?
I honestly don't know because it's been such a bad run. I may play the first couple and just head out of there and go to Paris and sulk for a while. I don't know.
Maybe you'll win enough to pay for the trip to Paris. Wouldn't that be a nice change?
Now, that would be cool. That would be very, very good.
All right. Well, before you continue on with the second part of your European trip, we do have some poker news to get to. We're joined here at Harrah's St. Louis by Scott Long, who is the publisher of Ante Up Magazine, a poker magazine that's available in poker rooms all around the country. They're in their fourth year of publishing. Scott, thanks for joining me here.
Thank you very much for having me.
I thought we'd get Scott's insight on some of these stories about Full Tilt, but before we even get into the latest on Full Tilt, I have to play for you a clip I found online of an upcoming poker movie that's going to be released in February. It's called All In. And if you listen to this clip, you will hear it start and end with Full Tilt founder Howard Lederer. In the middle, you'll hear Matt Damon and Johnny Chan and Annie Duke and Sports Illustrated's Frank DeFord, and Chris Moneymaker is in there as well. But listen to this 30-second trailer clip, and then try not to laugh when you hear the last thing Howard Lederer says in this. Roll it, Jason.
The kindling that got it all started, I think, is just that poker is such a great game.
There is something cool about being good at poker.
This is simply a fad. Poker right now is bigger than the Super Bowl.
His name was Moneymaker.
I was this big, heavy, drunk, degenerate gambler.
Drug dealer, stripper, poker player.
Kind of like lose respect for money, I guess, when you make that much money that easy every month.
It was like the end of the world in poker. It just everything stopped.
You know, the hero of the story was also cheating. And that's just not... The heroes of poker don't cheat.
The heroes of poker don't cheat. Coming out of the mouth of Howard Lederer, one of the founders of Full Tilt Poker, who, of course, is the heart of the indictments that were handed down on Black Friday and the more recent ones with the civil lawsuit by the Department of Justice against him and Chris Ferguson and Ray First, in addition to CEO Ray Bittar. And now we have more developments in that case. I just had to play that because I love the irony of Howard Lederer saying the heroes of poker don't cheat. He was once considered one of the heroes of poker. In fact, last year, another periodical named him the most influential person in poker. No comments? Okay.
Well, no. There's lots of things going on. I'll give my 30-second spiel. I've been talking to a number of pros, a number of different people. It appears that when Daniel made the statement that they're either thieves or buffoons, it might be the buffoon end of it. Honest to God, it looking more and more and more like Ray Bittar was the one orchestrated and ran this whole thing. And the other guys, not to excuse them, they're still liable. They're still going to have to pay the piper. They're in big trouble, and they're going to be in trouble for a long time. But it appears that this started and was orchestrated more by Ray than anybody else.
Well, the news that has broken in the last week goes along with something that I mentioned on last week's show, which was we had heard that this Bernard Tapie group, this French businessman, and his son Laurent Tapie were negotiating to buy Full Tilt Poker. And on Friday, the Bernard Tapie group announced that it was acquiring it. We told you last week about Tapie's shady past. He was accused and convicted of fixing some soccer matches in the 90s. He did some jail time. He does have some successes on his resume, too. He turned around Adidas, which he bought in 1989, sold it in the early 90s for nearly double. That's the kind of business he's in. He acquires distressed companies, and in the poker world, Full Tilt certainly qualifies as a distressed company. But this is not nearly a done deal because they still have some hurdles that they have to overcome. Scott, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they would still have to get A, a license, and B, approval from the DOJ, right?
Well, yeah, certainly they need a license now since the license was revoked last week, which, you know, the current Full Tilt principals were upset about because they thought it would hinder this sale. Certainly the statements from the Gaming Commission were contrary to that the fact that they pulled the license does not preclude them from reissuing it to a new owner.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, you have to get that through. And then obviously the sale is contingent on resolving these DOJ issues, which I think are still pretty high hurdles to overcome. So, you know, my partner and I have been traveling the last week, and everywhere we stop, people are saying, hey, did you hear Full Tilt's been sold? And when you look into it, it hasn't really been sold, and it's agreement to buy it subject to the DOJ stuff being cleared up.
Now, I will say that, Dennis, last week on the show, you were saying, hey, if these guys buy it, no matter what their past is like, as long as the players are going to get their money back, they are our best friends. Do you still feel that way?
Oh, I absolutely do. There's got to be some way to get the players their money back. I mean, this is the life savings of some of these guys. You know, then what it is, look, it's not that complicated. If they step in here and take over the company and refund the money to the players, then everybody has a choice. They have a choice whether they want to continue to play it. They have a choice if they want to test these people out, see what kind of a track record, see what goes. I mean, there's no problem. Well, there's potential problems, but it's a much better situation than what we have right now. First thing, utmost that we have to do is get the players their money back. We've got to figure out a way to do that.
What have the players at the EPT been saying about this? Some of them probably still have money locked up on Full Tilt Poker. They heard about the sale. What's their reaction been?
Most of them are ecstatic, and most of them do the very same thing that you were talking about. They immediately jump to the conclusion it's a done deal, which it is not. There's a lot of hurdles to go over. But a lot of them are saying that if Full Tilt opens back up and they get the blessing, they are going to play there. I was rather flabbergasted at the table sitting there listening to him. You know, one gentleman said he had almost $60,000 on there. He'd probably take $50,000 out immediately, but he's going to leave the other $10,000 in and just continue to play. He said it's a very good software. It was a large one. PokerStars is the best. But, you know, if you want to play on two different sites, Full Tilt used to be the site of choice, the second most popular, and it will still probably get a number of people going back to it. I was a little surprised at that.
Yeah, I find that very fascinating, Dennis, myself, because a couple of the radio interviews I've done in the last couple of weeks, people asked me when I thought they were going to get their money back, and I literally laughed out loud. I'm like, don't count on getting this money back. It's gone. It's spent. The only way you're going to get your money back is somebody's going to come and buy the company and agree to refund the players, and I just don't see how it's a viable business operation at this point to spend that amount of money and then to keep the Full Tilt name going forward. I think the Full Tilt name is soiled beyond belief at this point. But it's very interesting to me to hear that you have players out there saying differently. So maybe that does give some hope that this ownership group can turn it around. I would be very surprised to see if they could do that, though.
You see, you had the same attitude that I did. Last week I was saying the same thing, and that's why I was sitting at the table shocked. But it wasn't just one table. Two or three different tables on that, the conversations about Full Tilt, and people are going to go back and play on it. They're just wondering, in fact, the one guy said, well, I'm going to play on it, I just wonder how long until the newbies start coming to it. He was worried that he wouldn't have new fish, you know, new people to play against, that it might hurt it that way. But he himself was definitely going to play. I was totally shocked. I was agreeing with you before those conversations.
Who will be a Full Tilt Pro? In the new company, who would be a Full Tilt Pro? Who would be the red pros on Tilt? Would the 19 other owners, you know, the Jennifer Harmons and the Phil Ivies and the others, would they be allowed or would they even want to be associated with this brand once it's got new ownership and Howard and Chris and the rest are gone?
Again, I don't know, but I there's lots of information that's not come out yet. We've got to be a little careful of what we say here. But I would say that some of them are squeaky clean. Some of them have absolutely no connection whatsoever with the board of directors, never sat in on a meeting, had no idea any of this was going on. We're just innocent investors. And, you know, when the dust all settles, they're not going to have an investment, obviously. But if they want to continue to play, if they are still could be offered a job as a pro, I think some of the 19 will survive. Yes, I do.
All right. Now, here's one other twist, and I know you've got to run because you've got a meeting you've got to get to. I just want to talk to you about one other point here, which is a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning that says that the Tappies may address Full Tilt's liabilities by offering equity in a revived company to poker players who are owed the most money. That not only that, but they might go to some of the existing owners, the ones who would not be involved in managing the company, but those who, I guess, haven't been criminally indicted by that point, and might have them continue to be a part of this. I guess that means some of the pros, but if you're a guy who has $60,000 on there, or you're a guy like Blair Hinkle here in Missouri who's got, he won an FTOPS event in February, and he still hasn't gotten his $1.3 million first prize, would you accept it if somebody came to you and say, we're not going to give you your money back, but you can have a percentage of the company? Would you take that, Dennis?
Let me tell you, they could probably talk to the blue in the face, and I wouldn't take it. I'd have to have a whole lot of convincing.
I would feel the same way. You know, to quote Cuba Gooding Jr., show me the money, then we'll talk.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a very interesting that gets to the point that I was thinking. There's no way that somebody was going to dump this amount of money into this site. And if they're going to say, hey, rather than us pay you back, we'll give you equity in the company, now all of a sudden they don't have to come up with anywhere near the amount of money that we think they have to. They just have to convince these people to take the deal. So that's a very interesting development as well.
All right, Dennis, have a good evening there in London and a good trip down to Cannes. We'll talk to you from there next week.
All right, take care, my friends.
All right, there's Dennis Phillips live from the EPT in London here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harris, sitting here at the feature table of Harris St. Louis Poker Room with Scott Long, who's the publisher of Anti-Up magazine, which, by the way, had a very nice piece about us this week. One of your reporters, Don Matasovsky, came by and talked to me a few weeks ago and wrote up a very nice piece, which is featured in there. I tweeted a link to it earlier today on my Twitter account, Paul Harris Show, and on Dennis's as well, which is Dennis_Phillips. Thank you very much for that.
Absolutely.
I want to talk a little bit about the business of being in the poker media, but first let's talk some more about this Full Tilt
story.
Sure,
absolutely.
Because it's still such a big deal. One of the things that is interesting to me is not just the potential ownership here being offered to some of the players, but this hurdle that they have to overcome to start up the company again. And we
right.
mentioned that they've got to get licensed. The Alderney Gaming Council in Ireland was the one that licensed Full Tilt Poker, and last Thursday revoked that license. They said when they revoked it, we're not saying that they can't get the license back if management changes.
Right.
Do you see them getting back into that business?
Well, I think the one thing that we've seen with online sites, and not all gaming commissions, but a lot of them seem to be fairly loose on who they accept.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, Ultimate Bet has had a license for quite a while, even after their big scandal. So, yeah, I don't think it's a big hurdle. To be honest, I think that's probably the smallest of the hurdles that a new Full Tilt has, is getting a new gaming license. Obviously, the biggest one, I think, is just restoring trust in the name, that when you deposit money on there, that it's going to be taken out of your account, and when you want to withdraw it, it's going to be funded back to your account. And to me, that's the massive Mount Everest hurdle to.
Yeah, and this notion of players continuing to play on Full Tilt, even if they do get back some of their money, leaving it on there and wanting to play there, why would you do that when you've got a reputable company in PokerStars and the rest of the world? Party Poker is out there, and no one's ever said a bad word about them
right.
ever since they
Absolutely.
Paid off the DOJ back in the UIGEA settlement back in 2006 and 7. So I don't understand why you'd want to do. If I have somebody coming to do some work on my home, I hire a contractor,
mm-hmm.
and he does a lousy job, and he's late, and he's not, he's not using standard materials, and it's below code, and my house ends up a mess. Once he fixes all that, I don't then call him the next time I want to put on an addition. I'm probably going to call a different contractor. And to me, this is the same thing. You screwed me once and hung my money out there to dry where I didn't even know if I'd ever get it back.
Right.
And by that point, it could be 6, 9, 12 months before people do see their money back, although Laurent Tapi says he thinks they can have it up and running again by January. January 2012.
Yeah.
Is that possible, Scott?
Oh, I think it's immensely possible. Obviously, you're not going to be able to market it to the U.S., and that's a real big other challenge of Full Tilt. The vast majority of their players were U.S. players.
Yes.
That's why they got hurt so much with the Black Friday.
Do they have a vast worldwide customer
I don't think
base?
They certainly did not. There was a time where PokerStars took a different path in Full Tilt, and I think PokerStars took the better path. They said, you know what, we're not going to put all of our eggs in one basket. We're going to become the global leader in online poker. And when Black Friday happened, they were able to obviously process payments very quickly and exit the U.S. market without really much of a problem. Obviously, their business was down significantly, but not fatally, obviously.
Yeah.
And so Full Tilt to come back, I mean, they're going to have to market themselves now to a worldwide audience, which they didn't do as well in the past, and they're going to have to fight these thoughts in people's heads.
Yeah.
But to your point, you're a reasonable thinking person, Paul. I've just met you, but I can tell that already. I'm a reasonable thinking person. The world is populated with not responsibly thinking people,
yeah.
And I think those people are going to look at these equity deals and say, yeah, sure. I might not get anything. I might as well take this. Or, hey, you know, there's still good action on Volta that I'll play no matter what. Mm-hmm. I mean, people went back to Ultimate Bet after the scandal there.
That's
so,
true.
I mean, there's nothing to say that people aren't going to go back to a full tilt.
Let's talk about the Alderney Gambling Control Commission. I got their name wrong before, but that's it, the AGCC. They issued a statement Thursday when they revoked Full Tilt's license that, as I said, you know, it could be reactivated if we have new ownership and new management. But it also said to the players, essentially, don't come to us for help. They say, following the revocation of the licenses, AGCC no longer has authority to intermediate or arbitrate on player issues or disputes. Any player who believes they're the victim of a crime as a result of their dealings with Full Tilt should, in the first instance, contact their own local police in their country of residence and report the money to them. These reports will then be coordinated centrally. Can you imagine somebody here calling the St. Louis County Police? Hi, I got ripped off by an online poker company that was based in Ireland. Can you help me? No, they have other better things to do at the county level than that. They're not going to work to help you get your money back at all.
Well, but it's almost as funny as the people you hear that call up the cops and say, hey, someone just robbed me of my marijuana. I mean, what do they expect? I mean, they're getting themselves in trouble from anything they got called.
Well, no, the difference is that marijuana is illegal. Playing poker online was not illegal.
Well, yeah, you know that and I know that, but our government seems to think a little differently, so...
They also said in their statement that, this is the AGCC, quote, Full Tilt has been requested to provide a specific player contact. This is awaited and will be incorporated here upon receipt. In other words, the AGCC, the commission that licensed and regulated this company, Full Tilt Poker, they can't even tell you who to contact, and Full Tilt doesn't even call them back with information.
Yep.
It's just... It does raise this question. What exactly does a gambling control commission do if they're obviously not controlling gambling in any way?
I think the first priority of some of these gaming commissions is to cash checks. And I think that's what's going on here. I mean, you don't have to necessarily have any kind of real... oversight.
No oversight.
One. Yeah.
There's apparently no oversight. It was
absolutely.
Essentially like, hey, send us a check for $65 and you're licensed in our city.
It's exactly what I think is happening in some of these commissions. I mean, I'm not saying necessarily that that's what's going on with this one. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're spoiled here in the United States because our gaming commissions are far more powerful or take the job more responsibly. Some might say too responsibly and too overhanded.
Yeah.
But I
would say that. If I were licensed in this state by the Missouri Gaming Commission, I would probably have an aneurysm every time they told me to do something because it's apparent they have nothing to do with the real world of poker.
Yeah.
It's like they've never ever played poker.
Right.
Maybe the AGCC is like that too. It was just a bunch of bureaucrats who were given the job and didn't know what they were supposed to have oversight of in the first place, but they didn't offer any.
Well, and that's what's real interesting here is that you see the yin and yang of this. You see, you know, here in Missouri, obviously, in Florida, it's the same way. That no one down there involved in regulating poker has ever played poker. So you get frustrated with the overhandedness of it. But at the same time, you look at a commission that apparently just turns its head to the issue, and then you're just as frustrated with there. So really, I think what players need is somewhere in the happy medium, and you don't want one or the other.
Can you imagine people who had money on Full Tilt earlier this year who tried to move it on the secondary market? And do you think that's going to start up again now with the possibility that Full Tilt might bloom again? There are people who still have funds there who thought, well, I'm an American and I'll never get my money back, but I got a friend who lives in London or in Athens or wherever. I'll sell it to them. You know, maybe they'll buy it for me dollar for dollar. More like pennies on the dollar.
Right.
But if those people bought them, can they ever get their money back again, do you think?
Well, again, it's a big trust factor now. I mean, I think there are going to be people out there that believe that they will be able to get their money back more so than other people, obviously. So it's just a matter of matching it up. I mean, it really is kind of interesting to me. There's an operation here in the United States called the Iowa Electronic Markets. It's run by the University of Iowa, and they do trading on elections.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy shares in Mitt Romney if you want. You can buy shares in Michelle Bachmann if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all completely legal. But when it gets close to the nomination, you know, it's a foregone conclusion. But people are still buying some of these other candidates for pennies on the dollar, and there's always going to be speculators in the market, no matter what market it is. So, yeah, absolutely. I think you're going to find some people that be happy to buy up your full tilt money for pennies on the dollar, and then people will be happy to get pennies on the dollar right now because most people who have full tilt money don't think they're going to get a dime back. They really shouldn't.
Alvin G. tweeted me this morning to ask who would want to be sponsored by a new full tilt poker.
Right.
And my answer to that would be somebody who wants to have their travel and buy-ins paid for by a company.
I think there's a lot of people that would. I mean, think about this. I mean, again, I like to go back to the Ultimate Bet because that's the first big scandal. They still, after that scandal, they still had Joe Seebach, they still had Andy Duke, they still had Phil Hellmuth.
They signed Prahlad Friedman, who they had stolen money from to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. They convinced him to come back on. So don't fool yourself that even some of the current full tilt pros or red pros or other pros out there looking for a sponsor won't go, yeah, I'll be a full tilt pro. You'll pay for me.
Well, here's the thing. I know you're going to ask me about how Black Friday affected the media here pretty soon, but the people that are affected the biggest in this whole thing, I think, are the sponsored pros. I mean, that's a good chunk of money those folks lost. And you're right. And that's, you know, they built their personal business off of that, you know, flying, you know, getting tournament buy-ins and things like that. And that when that dried up, I think there's going to be some people that say, hey, if somebody wants to give me money, I'll do it.
Yeah. All right, last thing about this full tilt story for now, which is the statement that came out over the weekend from the Department of Justice, which said, because we keep talking about getting the players their money back, and I mentioned last week that there is a victims compensation fund that the DOJ runs for people who are the victims of federal crimes, and the Poker Players Alliance was saying, hey, you know what? People who lost money on full tilt are the victim of a crime, so they should use that. Here's what the DOJ said in their statement. At this time, this office, together with the FBI and other agencies, is attempting to trace, secure, and forfeit as much as possible of the funds derived from the operation of the fraud committed by Full Tilt Poker and its board members. We're also attempting to obtain and examine the books and records. Many of those are kept overseas. The return of forfeited funds to victims of the alleged fraud, I like that word being used there, victims of the alleged fraud may be possible, but it will depend on several factors, including the successful conclusion of the litigation, the amount of funds seized and ordered forfeited by the court, and compliance with other procedures the DOJ may eventually establish regarding the return of forfeited funds to victims who lost money as a result of the alleged fraudulent contact. We can't predict the duration of these proceedings other than to state that they will last for many months at the least. So, bottom line here, don't expect the DOJ to be cutting you a check before Christmas.
No. And don't expect the DOJ to be cutting you a check before they cut themselves a check. And I think a statement like that, this is the real problem. I think players are going to see that first part you talked about. Hey, victims compensation fund, and then skip the rest that you read there.
Yeah.
And that's the real important stuff. I mean, there's a pecking order here, and unfortunately, players are very low on that pecking order.
Paul Harris with Scott Long, the publisher of Anti-Up magazine, here on the Final Table Poker Show, live from Harris, St. Louis. In a few minutes, Jared Tendler will join me to talk about his book, The Mental Game of Poker. But you've been in the publishing business now for 4 years with Anti-Up. And how are things going in this post-Black Friday environment? Because back in April, we talked about how poker websites like Poker News and others and Card Player and some of your other competitors are being impacted by not having all those pages of Full Tilt and Ultimate Bet and Poker Stars ads in them. How are you doing?
Yeah, interestingly enough, Black Friday, as much as I hated it as a player, is good for our business. And it's because our business has always been focused on brick-and-mortar rooms and everyday players. We didn't have a lot of online advertising. In fact, actually, our only online advertiser was PokerStars. Certainly, we missed them. They were a great company and supported us well. But our business was not built on that. So when Black Friday came, we were still business as usual, where our competing magazines obviously were scrambling a little bit more than we were. Since then, we have continued to grow the magazine. We've expanded out to California. Headed home now on this long trip. I started in Arizona, went to California, and now I'm right here in St. Louis, and I'm headed home to Florida tomorrow. But the magazine's expanded all the way out to California now. We've replaced all the money we lost with PokerStars with new advertisers and have several more lined up. So, you know, our magazine has grown. It's been 80 pages where the other magazines have shrunk. So we're doing very well, I think, in this. And, again, from a player standpoint, I certainly want a regulated online poker back soon. It's obviously going to be good for our business as well. But we certainly weren't hurting anywhere near as bad as other folks.
So the focus of what you're writing about and your reporters are writing about in Anti-Up is much more about what is going on in brick-and-mortar casinos around this country.
Absolutely. Always has been. And, you know, that's what was missing in magazines when we started this. We decided we wanted to write a magazine that we could be in. And I'm not saying we, the publishers, we could put our picture in it, but I mean everyday players, the 1-2 limit players, the 4-8 limit players, the $100 tournament players, you're just not going to get in any of the other magazines out there. And our magazine's built on promoting that and telling you where to play. You know, let's face it, 95%, maybe more, of poker players in the United States are that level.
Yep.
You know, for every Dennis Phillips out there, there's 15,000 Scott Longs, and our magazine speaks to the 15,000 Scott Longs.
Yeah, you know, when I'm playing here on Friday night at Harrah's in the PLO game, and we're happy to get two or maybe three tables of that going on, I know that there are 8 or 9 1-2 tables going on.
Absolutely.
With a long list. The business here at this poker room at Harrah's St. Louis, I know, has grown since Black Friday. Have you seen that happening in your reports from other rooms around the country?
Yeah, it was interesting right after Black Friday. We surveyed a lot of managers and what they thought the impact would be. Most of them thought they would see maybe a 10-15% boost. None of them were real ecstatic about it. But yeah, business has been up in most markets that I've talked to since then. Not as dramatically as I think some players would think. Yeah, and the reason why is, you know, if you're an online player, it's really tough to gear down to the brick and mortar on a daily basis. When you're used to multi-tabling 7 tournaments at once, or, you know, 15 cash games at once, to come and play one table that's being dealt by a competent dealer, but not obviously an online, you know, computer.
Yep.
It's a real game changer.
Yep.
If you're a sit and go specialist, good luck finding sit and goes in most poker
rooms. Even 6 max.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's a whole class of poker players that really are lost right now, and they're not willing to force themselves to play in an environment they don't want. So I think that's why the numbers weren't dramatically different than they were, but certainly they've been up.
Tell me about Florida, your home state.
Absolutely.
I was there a year ago and played at the Palm Beach Kennel Club.
Mm-hmm.
And at the Isle and at the Hollywood Casino there. The action seemed to be good. I know it was better than it was when you had that ridiculous $100 limit. How has it been in 2011?
Yeah, the laws changed July 1st of last year, so we're about 13-14 months into the real poker, as we like to call it, with no caps on buy-ins or tournament buy-ins or bet limits. Again, most managers were right on. I mean, I give managers credit. They know what they're doing. They predicted an increase of around 12-15%, and that's exactly where it's been across the board. Surprising to me, some rooms have actually lost business, which is really tough for me to fathom, that now they can play whatever they want.
Wow.
And some rooms obviously are doing much better than that to average it out. But there's been a lot of curiosity from folks around the country about what the Florida poker market's like now, and they've come to visit. Obviously, the circuit event at Palm Beach Kennel Club had record numbers. World Poker Tour event at Seminole Hard Rock also did smashing business. I think right now it's just getting the word out to people who have come previously to Florida and played with that ridiculous $100 max buy-in, that the law has changed now and it's uncapped. And I think some of these tournaments that are going to be televised soon, we just did a couple up in Jacksonville that have aired. Obviously, the World Poker Tour will air soon. I think that's really going to get Florida poker on the minds of people around the country.
Have you seen an influx of pros who said, ooh, a market with new poker fish?
Yeah, interestingly enough, when they announced the limits were going to change, we heard from a lot of pros that said, hey, we're moving there July 1st because Florida has a reputation for a lot of fairly easy players, and the reason is we don't have full casinos there outside of a couple Indian casinos. So our poker rooms are dominated not only by poker players, but also blackjack players, roulette players, slot players, people that can't play those games. I mean, poker's the only game in town,
mm-hmm.
And that makes the games a little softer. So, yeah, there are a lot of pros that said they wanted to come and get the easy money. I don't think as many came as said they were going to come, and I think quite a few of them found out that it wasn't quite as easy as they thought it would be. But, yeah, I think there's the pros making the circuit, Florida, part of their circuit now. I don't know how many actually have moved there and are playing full time.
Well, Scott, I appreciate you coming and joining me here. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, anytime.
Scott Long is the publisher of Anti-Up magazine, which you find in poker rooms Can we say coast to coast?
Yep, 300 poker rooms and leagues coast to coast,
excellent,
including all of them here in Missouri.
You can also find them online at anteupmagazine.com, where you've got not just news but forums and blogs and other things as well, right?
All kinds of good stuff there. Check out the website.
Yeah, thanks again, Scott. I appreciate it,
Paul. Thank you.
Scott Long joining me here on the final table. I'm Paul Harris. Back in just a couple of minutes with Jared Tendler, the author of The Mental Game of Poker. You think you know why you go on tilt? Wait until you hear what Jared has to say as we continue with the final table live from Harris, St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. And don't forget, our podcasts are downloadable via iTunes or via Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from Harrah's, St. Louis, and brought to you in part by Homestead Financial Mortgage for great rates. Call 800-GRANNY-8. The month of October is going to be as full of tournaments as every other one is here at Harrah's, St. Louis. For the full schedule, you can go to harrahs.com/STL poker. There are 10 $60 tournaments every week, a 160 on Thursday nights, a 125 on Friday nights, and the 125 on the weekends. I told you before about the $200 shootouts with the $10,000 guarantee for first place. They're actually going to run that twice this month. Once will be on Saturday, the 22nd, and the other one will be on Sunday, the 30th. That's two chances to get in, and, of course, two chances on each of those days because there are five tables at noon, five tables at 3 p.m. The winners of those 10 tables altogether then come back for the final table that evening. If you beat nine people at your first table and you beat nine people at the final table, you make $10,000 for your $200 entry. And while we're speaking of large amounts of money, don't forget that at the end of this month, Dennis and I are hosting the largest cash game in Missouri history, a $15,000 minimum buy-in, 25-50 no-limit hold'em game with $10 antes. We already have enough people locked up for two full tables of this. If we get enough, we'll open up a third table. For details, you can email dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. I will be checking that email address, and I will send information back to you on how you can lock up a seat, how you can wire money to the cage, how you can get a hotel room at a discount, and all the rest for that weekend. We are expecting people from all over the Midwest region to come and play, not only in that, but also the parallel game will be running, which will be 10-20 with a $5 ante and a much smaller buy-in, of course. So if you want information on all of that, email dennisphillipspoker@gmail.com. And for the tournament schedule or the poker room hotline number, just go online to harrahs.com/STL poker. In our guest segment today, I'm happy to welcome Jared Tendler back to the show. Jared was on for a couple of minutes as a poker coach several weeks ago. Now he's back for an extended segment to talk about his new book, The Mental Game of Poker, which came out in paperback earlier this summer and is now also available as an ebook for Kindle and Nook or downloadable as a PDF. Jared, welcome back to the final table.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to be here.
The book is subtitled Proven Strategies for Improving Tilt Control, Confidence, Motivation, Coping with Variance, and More. So let's talk for the first segment here about tilt, something that all poker players of any skill level, of any buy-in level, end up suffering from at some point. Tell us how to, if you can't avoid tilt, then deal with tilt.
Well, the first thing you got to do is actually define it, and that was the first thing I do in the book. In poker, there's a lot of different definitions for tilt, and the one that seems to predominate is that tilt is anything less than playing your best. And so if tilt is anything less than playing your best, I mean, you could be tilting because you're bored, you could be overconfident, you could be angry, it could be a number of things, all of which would require a different strategy to actually fix it. So for me, tilt is just about anger. And in my 4 years of actually coaching poker players, talking to them on forums, and actually working with them directly, I found that well over 80% of the time that players are talking about tilt, they're talking about anger. So I'm not just defining tilt as anger because I want to. I feel like it's representative of what poker players tend to be experiencing when they're on tilt.
I just wanted to inject that anger may not necessarily come from taking a bad beat where somebody sucks out on a two-outer on you. It could be anger at yourself for a mistake you made or for not paying attention or for a variety of other reasons, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. In the book, I actually defined 7 different types of tilts. Running bad can cause it, where you're on these streaks of losing where, it's not necessarily always just bad beats and suckouts. It's just, you're hitting the top ends of your opponent's range and players are just bluffing at the right times and you just can't seem to get anything going. I mean, that can be extraordinarily frustrating when, you have goals as a player and you want to do well and you want to win. So there are many reasons for it and the first key to solving your tilt problem or in this case your anger problem is to actually figure out what it is that's causing it. Like you said, it could be mistakes, it could be running bad, it could be a sense of entitlement. Better players oftentimes get really pissed off when they lose against weaker players and feel like, that they're entitled to win because they're better, because they work harder. As I said, there's many reasons to experience anger. We just got to kind of narrow it down and then identify the underlying flaw that then kind of sparks and creates that anger.
That entitlement tilt could be subtitled The Way Phil Hellmuth Plays.
I actually mentioned that in the book, and although we got to give Phil a little credit, I think he's reformed a little bit at this year's World Series, so we'll see how he continues to do. But in the past, you definitely could say that Phil felt entitled because of all of his past successes, that he should just keep winning. There was no evolution of poker. There was no reason that he shouldn't be winning because of what he had accomplished.
Are you saying when you talk about anger as a problem that anger itself is the problem, or is anger a symptom of a bigger problem?
Yeah, that's exactly it, that it's a symptom. It's a symptom of a flaw in a player's approach to the game. So, we talk about Phil there. Phil is assuming, or I'm assuming that Phil's thinking that way, but there are players who assume that because they're better, that automatically means that they win. Now, on a logical level, that same player knows about variance, but in these moments where they're losing to a weaker player, there's just a reaction, and something just clicks in, and that anger overwhelms reason, overwhelms their understanding of variance in the game, and they just feel that they should win. And that flaw is essentially what creates that anger, because obviously not everybody has that reaction.
All right, then explain the benefit of tilt.
It's a nice eye-grabbing headline. But when you go on tilt, the reason that you end up making poor decisions is because anger rises to a point where it begins to actually shut down your ability to think clearly. So you're not going to be making good decisions at that time because you literally, it's like your brain is malfunctioning as if it was a computer. And so at that time, you revert back to parts of your game that you've mastered. And that aspect of your game is, of course, going to be weaker than you playing at your best. But it's going to essentially highlight areas of your game that you're really strong in, because, you may still be on tilt, but folding, marginal hands pre-flop. So your tilt mistakes happen post-flop, for example. So you can say emphatically that you have mastered pre-flop play. You can now move on to the things that are weak in your post-flop play. And so the benefit of tilt is that it really kind of strips your skill set naked. You get to see exactly what you're doing really well, that you've mastered, and the areas of your game that you're still very weak in and require more work. And it kind of defines what you're exactly going to focus on in those next several sessions afterwards.
The interesting thing to me about this is sometimes when you go on tilt, you play more hands, you play marginal hands that you shouldn't play in marginal situations, you make marginal decisions and you make them the wrong way every single time. That can be the way you play because of tilt. But I think what you're saying is if you can recognize that you're on tilt, now maybe you don't get yourself into those situations.
Exactly. If you know that those are your mistakes, what I recommend to players is you actually study your pattern of tilt and the kinds of mistakes that you're going to make when you get there. And so when you kind of recognize the your anger is rising and you've made maybe a couple marginal plays, it's an instant cue to say, hey, okay, I've got to take action. And one of those actions is to tighten up and really, really work hard and kind of fight against yourself in a sense, fight against that tendency to play more of those marginal hands and play properly. And if you can do that, then not only are you going to, you know, prevent, you know, from losing more money, you're going to also reduce the severity of your tilt, and you're also going to train your skills and get better as a player.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis talking with Jared Kendler, a poker coach whose new book is called The Mental Game of Poker. Jared, I have to tell you, one of the players in one of the cash games here in the room came up to me before the show, saw that I had your book on the table in front of me. I told him that you were going to be my guest. He says, oh, I wish you wouldn't do that. That book is too good. I wish other people wouldn't read that and get better.
The highest compliment.
Let's talk a little bit about emotion, because that's a function but it's not just a part of tilt, but it's also a part of the entire game. You in your book describe the spectrum of emotion a poker player can go through. Talk about some of those parts of the spectrum, if you would.
Yeah, well, like, each emotion has its own spectrum. So if we're talking about anger, you know, anger can begin with some just minor irritation and then it might build into some frustration and then anger and then rage. We're talking about anxiety. You know, anxiety begins with some doubt or some worry or concern, and then builds into anxiety and then fear, and eventually just, you know, you can become completely paralyzed. Confidence is a big one. Now, a lot of players don't realize that overconfidence can be a big problem. Being too optimistic, you know, or feeling too good about your game can be a problem. And so, you know, if you look at the spectrum there, we're talking about feeling like crap about your game and being really underconfident or having low confidence, you know, that's equally as a problem as having too much of it. And the reason that these become problems is because it's the same thing as tilt. Your brain shuts down when you have too much emotion. And so if you want to be playing your best, you want to identify kind of the peak performance level where your emotional level is intense, but not too intense. So anger can be a good thing, you know. And Jordan was a famous example that I talk about in the book where, you know, he really used anger as a fuel for him to play the best, to play his best, but he didn't allow it to ever overwhelm his mind and shut down his ability to play well.
Interesting. In the beginning of the book here, you identify some of the characteristics of what you call mental game fish. You say fish are fish in part because they believe things that aren't true. Give me some examples of things that fish believe that are hurting their games.
Well, one, fish believe that emotion is the problem. As you said earlier, it's a symptom of the problem. We need to understand why the emotions are there. Sometimes they think that they are in more control of the end result than they actually are. And so they don't really understand the consequence of variance. And so at times where they are they're losing money because they're actually playing well, they don't realize that it's because variance is causing that. This is more of an obscure one, but there are some players who, when they're playing so well, they actually begin to believe that they can sort of read a person's soul and can predict the future. And in the book, I call them shitty psychics, for lack of a better term. That they believe that their future is exactly what they see. And so, if things are going really badly, they're predicting more of that, and they feel bad, or they feel worse because of that. Or if things are going real, really well, they just assume it's going to continue, and poker's an ATM, and, you know, here comes the money, and the rest is going to be easy.
I love a couple of the other things in here. A player who thinks the outcome of a hand can be changed by shouting or praying or playing a favorite hand. I love that. You know, you ask somebody why they made a play with two certain cards. Well, it's my favorite hand. I always play Queen-10 offsuit. That's my, you know, I've won so much money with Queen-10 offsuit. That's my favorite hand. Yeah. And I always tell them, you know what my favorite hand is? The last one that caused chips to be pushed towards me.
I like that. You know, one of these that I get questioned about sometimes is players who say one time. And it's the same deal. You know, they think that they're in more control of the game. They think that actually saying one time is going to have any effect on what card is going to come next.
or that anything they do, if they think about it, come on, Eight of Clubs, come on, Eight of Clubs, come on, Eight of Clubs, come on, like they're telekinetic,
exactly.
Like anybody is.
Exactly.
Those certainly go into the category of mental game fish. So how do people get away from these problems? I mean, I know that's what you coach them to, and that's what the entire book is about, but what's a basic thing that our listeners can take with them as they go forward in their poker-playing life, the simplest thing that they can do to make their mental game of poker better?
That's a good question. I guess I would say very simply, study it. Study it like you do the game of poker. I mean, fundamentally, the mental game is logical. It's strategic. It's just that people haven't talked about the mental game in that way predominantly before. They look at it as this mystical thing. It's uncontrollable. I just am the way that I am. I can't control my emotions. You know, all that is a bunch of BS. Like, the more you understand something, the more you can control it. And so study yourself. Study your own patterns. Study how you react in certain situations. And then the more you start to understand that, you're automatically going to be in more control. Now, if that's not enough, then, you know, buy my book or buy other books. There's a lot of good resources out there. And begin to actually start improving it, you know, using professional advice. I think a lot of people think that they can solve all of their problems on their own. And in some respects, they could. The question is, can you do it fast enough to stay, you know, kind of equal with the learning curve in the game? You know, if you're going to create an edge, you have to be doing something more or better than somebody else.
So when you're working with a student, let's say they're a live cash game player,
mm-hmm.
Are they taking notes on their own mental game while they're playing, and are they capable of changing it while they're playing, or is this something you do after the fact and you have to do some studying on before you come back the next time and they talk to you and you help them and say, all right, well, what did you do in this situation? What did you do in that situation? Let's make that better for the next time. Is it possible to do it in the moment?
It is. In the moment, you're talking about minor adjustments, very similar to how you'd minorly adjust your poker game. You know, you can't do something totally new and know for sure that it's correct, you know, tactically, and you can't do that mentally either. But, you know, if you do realize something that maybe a pattern that you've known for a while, let's say it's entitlement tilt, you know, you see it, and then you can immediately begin trying to control yourself and take a few deep breaths. Deep breathing is not like some mystical thing. It's just designed to kind of collect yourself, almost like if you were in an argument with somebody and you just sort of took a break for a second, just took a few deep breaths to mentally collect yourself, and that will get you thinking a little bit more clearly. And for the most part, people have an idea of what to say to themselves to calm them down, and you don't want to escalate it. But you're absolutely right. You can take notes during your play, keep it to a minimum so you maintain most of your focus on the action. Then after your session, expand on those notes, add more details, think more about it, and then try to organize those into something that's coherent. You know, too often these notes can just kind of accumulate session after session. You want to begin to kind of put them together into something that's coherent so you can prepare before you play again with some bullet points of things that you're going to really focus on. And then as you identify new things the next time you play, it's like it becomes a cycle of improvement, and that's what you're really looking for.
All right, now I've got to ask you this. A listener named George just tweeted this to me, and he asked this in a kind of obnoxious way, but I want to give you a chance to answer it. He says, Jared's book sounds interesting, but if he's so smart about poker, how come he's not a famous poker player?
That's a good question. Well, I was an aspiring professional golfer, and I was working with golfers as a mental game coach, partially because I had my own mental hang-ups back when I was trying to play professionally. Got educated, got trained in this, and was working with golfers before I met a professional poker player named Dusty Schmidt on the golf course. The reason I don't play is because I know how good the players are that I work with. You know, my career and my long-term career is as a mental game coach. I do love poker, and I would love to be able to learn more and play more. But I think in any industry now, whether it's poker, whether it's other sports, or even in business, to be the best at something, you really have to focus on it. So I don't think I think I'd be doing a poker player is a big, I'd be very disrespectful to say that I could be at the top of my game as a coach, at the same time be at the top of my game as a player. I don't think those two things can happen together. I do think that I would have a great mental game in the game of poker, but tactically, it would take a long time and a lot of work for me to get as good as the players that I work with.
Very interesting. And you have worked with, what, a couple hundred different players and made their games better?
Yeah, yeah. Some of them are not, you know, big-time household names, but within the online circuit and certainly some of the live circuit, there's some big names.
Hey, if you can make a 1-2 game better, a 1-2 player better, that's probably where your audience is here. The book is called The Mental Game of Poker. It's subtitled Proven Strategies for Improving Tilt Control, Confidence, Motivation, Coping with Variance, and More. It's available in paperback and just this week as an ebook for the Nook or Kindle or download via PDF at jaredtendlerpoker.com. And, of course, we'll put a link to it on the Final Table blog as well. Jared, thanks. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate the time. Have a good one.
Jared Tendler joining me here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Tonight, if you're not watching the baseball playoffs, ESPN will be up to day 6 of its World Series of Poker main event coverage. It is on at a new time, 8:30 Central Time, 2 hours of coverage. They've moved it back to 8:30, probably not to conflict with baseball so much, also because they've got a new ESPN Films documentary series that is on from 7 to 8:30. Also, speaking of TV poker, Annie Duke's League Epic Poker had a sneak preview on the Velocity Channel last Friday night. It will have its real debut this weekend. I watched a little bit of the preview. Ali Najad is there as the analyst, and Pat O'Brien is the play-by-play guy. I have a couple of things I got to nitpick about with Pat O'Brien, who I've never liked as a sports broadcaster, and I didn't like him here either. He kept pronouncing Jason Mercier's name, Jason Mercier. Mercier. It's as if somebody came to him and said, now it's not pronounced Mercier, like the poker player Isabel Mercier. She's French. Her name is pronounced Mercier. Spelled the same way, but they probably said, she's Mercier, he's Mercier. So whenever he goes on the air, he refers to him as Jason Mercier. Nobody I know pronounces it that way, including Jason. Also, he kept referring to the poker games as the Battle on the Hardwood. No, Pat, that's basketball that's played on the hardwood. We play on the felt. He also puts too much emphasis on this GPI Global Poker Index that the Epic Poker League has started up. Well, you'll see for yourself if you watch it. It airs next on Velocity on Friday night and then CBS on Saturday, and they've got this $1 million sweepstakes that's going on during those telecasts as well. It's a little weird watching this thing because we know that Chino Rehm won it, and watching any of these things where you know what the finale is going to turn out to be, nowadays, in the days of live streaming of online events, it's a very different dynamic. We'll see if they get any ratings out of it for their time buy for Epic Poker. That's all the time we have for today. I'll meet you back here next Tuesday afternoon in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis with Dennis at the World Series of Poker Europe in Cannes. Until then, check out the website, thechipleader.com, for all of our past podcasts, or download them via iTunes, or catch us every Tuesday at 3 here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.